Good afternoon. It's just after 1:30 p.m. and it's Wednesday today. What is the date? January 10th. And we're meeting here in the commission hearing room, and we have two informal hearings scheduled today. The first one is Montana Dakota Utilities Company, Minot Air Force Base Distribution Tariff. It's case number PU06470. I'm Commissioner Susan Wiefald. We'll introduce the parties around the table.
Tony Clark.
Kevin Kramer.
Tammy Eberle with Montana Dakota Utilities.
Rita Mulkern with Montana Dakota Utilities.
Kent Blickensurfer with Quest.
Bill Benning, staff.
Patrick Fawn, staff.
And seated in the room are?
El Mock, staff.
Jerry Lean,
staff.
And two additional staff members who are working on the sound system. And since this is MDU's tariff application, we'll first go to them. But first I want to ask if Commissioner Kramer, because he has this portfolio, if he has any welcoming comments he wishes to make.
Yeah, just welcome, and this doesn't look overly complicated, but maybe if Pat or somebody from staff wants to go through it.
I think we'll ask Tammy to go through it first as the applicant for this, to go through the tariff and to explain it. Go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner. The filing before you reflects the culmination of a process that started with Montana Dakota's response to a request for proposal issued by the United States Air Force back in 2004. Montana Dakota received notification of contract award in September 2005, and we've been in contract negotiations with the Air Force until the time of this filing. Montana Dakota does currently provide natural gas service to the Minot Air Force Base under its authorized rate 64, and that service terminates at the delivery point into the base, which is privately held by the base at this point. The service under that authorized tariff will not change. We're selling gas to them at that delivery point. As noted in the filing and as noted in the contract, the transaction is subject to approval by the commission. And in addition to that, once we receive commission approval, we will move forward with some additional investigative work to determine if there is any serious concerns at that location. After a satisfactory completion of that work, Montana Dakota would first then assume ownership of the Air Force Base. And it's expected that this work would take a couple of months after we receive approval from you. Montana Dakota has long served the base with natural gas service, and this opportunity to expand those services will provide benefits to all of our North Dakota customers, as well as the residents of the base, with the addition of pipeline safety oversight. The monthly charge under this proposed rate 65 will provide a return on the investment and all associated expenses with operating and maintaining that system. The gas system will be acquired at a purchase price of $509,197. Based on our initial review of the system and requirements set forth by the Air Force in its request for proposal, it's estimated that additional capital expenditures of approximately $324,000 will be required in the first year of operation. There's also a schedule underlying the rates for capital expenditures expected throughout the term of that ownership. The majority of that first year investment is associated with replacement of regulators on some of the Air Force Base housing installations. Montana Dakota personnel have been in touch with Al Mock on your staff in regard to the pipeline safety requirements once Montana Dakota assumes ownership of the system. And upon approval of the transaction, we would then start to work with Mr. Mock in more earnest in developing a plan and including a timeline in getting that system into compliance with the jurisdictional requirements. And that is all I had for a summary. Rita Mulkern and I are available for questions.
Okay. Commissioner Kramer, portfolio, any questions? I have one. I noticed that at the bottom of, we have two memos, and one comes from Pat Fawn, and one comes from Mike Diller. And I'm first going to refer to the Mike Diller one. And on that one, he's not here today, but I went over this with him yesterday and asked him about it. In his second paragraph, he talks about a direct assignment of the low-cost debt to MDU's North Dakota gas operations. And would there be any problem, would MDU have any problem if the commission made the approval of this tariff contingent upon direct assignment of the North Dakota Minot Air Force Base debt to North Dakota operations?
Mr. Rita will address that question.
I'll speak loudly.
It picks up very well.
Okay. We would not object to that. However, I just want to caution about this might be, looking at setting a precedent. We've always used a utility capital structure, one capital structure, both gas and electric, and haven't been assigning, for instance, the pollution control bonds to the electric utility. We've always done a complete capital structure for the company. And so while this, Mike, and I did see his memo, the effects are minimal. Mike had an estimate in his memo, and that estimate, I would say, is overstated because our cost of debt has come down from when he looked at this and our capitalization changes. So the effect, I would estimate, is going to be probably half or less of what Mike's estimate was. So there will be very little effect, but we do not object to doing that. Just want to caution that something like this might lead in the future, if it's going to lead to, well, we're going to try to assign this here and this there, and, keeping in mind of our overall picture.
How would Mike get that information from you to see that your cost of debt has changed since he reviewed this on December 4th?
Well, when we did some, retired some debt in 2006 and issued some new debt, that will appear in our annual report to the commission that we filed in April, all our debt schedules, and so the cost has gone down. That's where he will see it. It would be available before April, but that's when we normally file our capital structure with the commission.
Pat, what would you suggest? Do you think that, would you suggest that we ask them to submit that to us earlier?
If it's something that you would like Mike to take a look at,
I would.
I think you should submit it sooner. I assume that MDU would like this tariff to go into effect sooner than later.
Yes, we would. Yes.
So Mike should have that information then sooner than April.
And Commissioner, just to tag on, the other side of this is when we filed the next time we come before you with a rate case, certainly all of that capital structure and what's current at that point in time would be readily available. So to review at that point in time as well, just to throw out another option in terms of setting a precedent, as Rita's mentioned, in ordering us to separate it today or to review it on an ongoing basis. But we certainly can provide the information and do want to move forward with this prior to
this goes forward. Does all, I think you had mentioned something about the gas would, the Air Force Base would continue as a customer, a single customer under rate 64,
yeah.
Is that correct?
I mean,
it would just
correct.
Be metered at the base gate, basically.
That is correct. We will not pick up, we will not begin metering all of the housing installation and all of the buildings on the base.
The customer is still the U.S. government.
That is correct.
Okay.
And it's my understanding that the rate of return that you'll receive as a result of the fees you're going to be charging with this are higher than your rate of return that you've been authorized by the commission. Correct?
Yes.
So that we won't have other customers subsidizing this purchase.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Pat, do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, the recommendation is to approve the tariff.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything, other questions that you would like to ask?
Well, I think Commissioner Clark just asked one that I was wondering if I was assuming the company wouldn't be billing individual home.
That's correct.
There were no new meters, right? I mean, there were replacement meters, but no new meters.
Right. And other than that, I guess probably have more
questions. State's biggest master meter.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Yeah. When I saw Elmock here, I thought a lot about gas safety and what that would mean for him and for MDU there, and the ability to get to shut off and how you're going to be shutting off. But that's all kind of separate from this.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting question though. Are there? I mean, I assume that the Air Force Base, as long as they held it, was kind of exempt from our oversight, our pipeline safety. When MDU takes control, do they become? It becomes just another paper record we have to follow up.
Part of the Minot MDU gas system.
The age of the system, does that
create that had a lot
additional?
To do,
that's why it costs them.
Yeah.
That has a lot to do with conversion to service and what some of the things they were talking about here. To bring the system into complete compliance. We're going to take a look. They're going to do some potholing. They're concerned that there may be some corrosion problems in some of the steel piping. They're going to check coatings and things like that. And once they do that, then they'll set up a replacement schedule for that for those sections of pipe that are suspect.
They'll bring them into compliance.
Right.
Okay. Interesting.
I have one question though that concerns the propane air system on the base. Is that part of this purchase?
No, it is not.
Are there any other questions, Bill? Do you have anything that you would like to ask? Jerry? Okay. All right, any further commission questions? If that being the case, then we will close the hearing on case number PU06470, and subject to MDU providing that information about the debt, MDU's debt. Okay. Thank you to Mike Dillard. All right, then we'll move to. Pat, do you need to get someone on the phone now?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
So it scans for.
I don't know if I saw some draft, but
I'm sleeping.
I need to look at it.
Do you have a copy of it?
I do. It's not been dropped in yet?
It's not an official bill to draft. They're still working on it.
Okay.
Talking about the one call.
You're kind of making me sound like I should really look at it like today.
Well, it feels like about a
thank you.
15-minute or something like that.
Quest conference.
It's about a 15-minute presentation.
Please enter your conference ID, followed by the pound sign.
They've got the expert on the line. I told the people on the phone earlier in the week that my job is to try to look pretty and sit here.
I gave up caffeine the first of the year, but I may. Said I gave up caffeine the first of the year, but I'm seriously reconsidering.
Did you give it up?
Go to chocolate, Tom.
I don't like chocolate.
It can have the same kick.
Yeah.
Drink way too much coffee.
That's what. I was just drinking way too much.
Thank you.
No, but I had for about
you will now be placed
the first 4
conference.
Days, I had horrible headaches, yeah.
When you
I finally
it
broke it, yeah.
That's what happened to Bob, too. It went on for a week when he gave up coffee.
Yeah, it was about 4 or 5 days, and now I don't, but.
Hello.
Ugh. I'm drinking decaf because I do like the taste, but. That was rough.
Hello, we got anyone from Quest on the phone?
I went cold turkey.
You.
Taper.
Someone
good
did
to
respond.
See you could do it.
Try it again.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hi, this is Chris Ferreras, and you also have Laurel Burke and Dean Bueller, Jason Top on.
Okay, great. Up, you guys take over.
All right. We'll open the informal hearing on case number PU0658, Public Service Commission, Quest Performance Assurance Plan Investigation. And first of all, we'll tell people who are listening who is participating in this informal hearing. Commissioner Susan Weefall.
Tony Clark.
Kevin Kramer.
Kent Blickensterfer, Quest.
Bill Bennick, staff.
Patrick Fawn, staff.
All right, and then I'm joining us by telephone.
By telephone, there's Chris Viveros, Jason Topp,
Laurel Burke, and Dean Bueller.
And Dean Bueller.
Jason, Laurel, and Dean. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm going to work on first names here instead of the whole thing. All right, and is there a certain part that each one of you would like to take on this? Tony, do you have any...
This is Laurel Burke. Folks are cutting out very badly for us.
It's very difficult to hear here as well.
All right, we'll try moving things around a little bit here. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. First, we'll ask Tony, as portfolio holder, if he has any comments that he'd like to make about this filing.
Nope, just welcome.
Okay, and then we'll go now to Quest and have them explain their tariff. It's not a tariff, your performance plan. And who's going to do that?
Maybe just for a little bit of...
This is Chris Riveros, and I'll probably go over most of the material with some help from the others that are on the phone. And have you provided the commissioners with the material?
I have. Chris, I think that, I'm sorry, I think Pat Fahn from staff had a couple of things he wanted to say first before you get started.
Okay.
And I think we've also expressed an interest in a time consideration for this, and Tony, you had mentioned one?
No.
Okay, so you were joking earlier about how much time you wanted this.
Oh, time. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just trying to weigh the PowerPoint, trying to figure how many minute PowerPoint that was.
Okay.
Just as a little bit of background, I thought I'd mention that we've had quite a few filings that were changes related to changes in performance indicator definitions, and we've had quite a few filings that represented changes in performance assurance plan, and there were, because of our statute, our statute affects whether these things can affect past interconnection agreements, future interconnection agreements, and eventually, Jason Topp suggested that maybe the only way that we could really make this effective for all interconnection agreements that are in place, to make changes effective for all of those, is to go to take the changes through this six-month review process, because the PAP provides for the six-month review process, and it provides that the changes would affect all interconnection agreements. And that's, we're here today to talk about all the proposals that have been made in the past and some of the new proposals that have been made, and the status of all the proposals. And in addition would be...
How many do we have?
Which ones do we want to implement at this time?
Okay. And we have that option. We could implement all of them or none of them?
Correct. The commission decides based on, the record here.
All right, and given that information, who would you like to have go first? Chris.
All right. Turning to the executive summary of the pending PAP-related items, I'm going to focus on those that are contained in the revised stipulation that Quest Corp filed on 9/22/2005. And just as reference, you'll see on the next page our summary of what we believe is pending. There really were three sets of filings, a stipulation that came out of Washington six-month review, stipulation that came out of the Arizona six-month review, and then the revised stipulation that incorporated the two and superseded it. And although there were case numbers opened for each of those filings for both the Exhibit B, the PIDs themselves, and the Exhibit K, the PAP. The revised stipulation only applied to the PAP because the PID changes had already gone into effect, both as a result of operation of law as well as communiques, in the first case a letter, in the second case an order from the commission acknowledging those PID changes going into effect. So the summary is going to focus on what was contained in the revised stipulation, and that's what we believe is pending before the commission. That includes changes that address line splitting. We established a standard of parity with Retail Quest DSL for the line splitting product in our new service quality PID. It also included establishing standards for XDSLi capable loops. That includes basically incorporating this additional flavor of unbundled loop in the standard PIDs where loops exist. That includes our commitments met OP3, provisioning interval OP4, the new service quality measure OP5A, a measure of the number of days delayed when an order isn't provided by the due date in OP6, as well as on the maintenance side, our standard measures, out of service cleared within 24 hours, mean time to restore, repeat troubles, and the overall trouble rate. The revised stipulation included the addition of the expanded version of PO20 into the PAP, our manual service order accuracy measure. It was done at a time where we were expanding PO20, which was implemented over four phases, and actually the fourth phase had gone into effect in June. So this was simply to incorporate the fully expanded PO20 into the PAP. It included stabilization and burn-in period components, which would have applied back in 2005. It identified it as a Tier 1B measure. It did not include it in Tier 2, and it spoke to how to address low-volume treatment. It also established benchmark standards for most of the products in OP5B, which is another measure of new service quality, looking at what occurs during the provisioning process and up to a couple of days after we convert service to a CLEC, until there is time for the actual maintenance systems to have been updated and recognize the trouble reports can come in from the CLEC. It applies low-volume treatment to OP5B such that with a 96.5% standard, which is quite high, it speaks to recognizing when you have less than 30 tickets that you're dealing with, that you apply a standard of no more than one order with trouble as long as you have no more than one order on your maintenance side that has experienced new service quality. It speaks to the new standards applying to no more than a rerun of 2 months of historical data, so that when this was to go into effect, it would look backwards no more than 2 months worth of data to apply. And it also included some items that really don't make changes to the PAP, but were part of the stipulation, including an acknowledgement that there would be no low-volume treatment for line splitting in OP3. Basically, that was saying that the standard in the PID should be the standard and the results should reflect how Quest does against that standard without any exception in the PID itself for low volume. That any low volume treatment should be a term of the PAP plan itself, not individual PIDs. There was an agreement that loop splitting would be reported diagnostically if we received any orders in 3 months consecutively. And that has yet to occur. we have not gotten any loop splitting orders. There was a commitment on Quest's part to continue to publish aggregate payments, as we've been doing, both by major PID category as well as at the sub-measure level. And there was an agreement that there would be no changes initiated regarding a new measure, BI-5, until the next six-month review cycle.
Okay, this is Commissioner Weefald, and I have a question.
Yes, Commissioner?
In September of this year, we received from Jason Topp, and it was comments from Liberty Audit regarding our Quest Performance Assurance Plan investigation.
Yes.
And that person had listed a number of findings that related to this, to these stipulations. And I'm wondering whether, have all of those findings been met? You said that you've refiled with us this performance assurance plan. The one came in, you said, in September. So does this plan address all the findings of, or concerns of Liberty Consulting when they did their audit of this?
Well, and the audit was against the PAP as it existed and was in effect for the calendar year 2004. So the filed and in effect PAP was what Liberty would have used to audit whether or not Quest was complying with those requirements with respect to making payments, reporting performance. And my understanding is that Liberty did find us to be complying to that. They did not address the pending changes from the stipulation.
All right, so they were reviewing what was currently in effect in 2004.
Exactly.
All right. Have we received any other comments on this, on these proposed changes? I'm asking this of staff. Have we received any other comments on these proposed changes from any party except from Quest with their proposals?
In our notice of this proceeding, we have received comments from MCI Metro Access Transmission Services, and they were supportive of the revisions that came from, I believe, the Washington and the Arizona stipulations.
This is Laurel Burke. We're having a hard time hearing again.
Okay. It's my, I was just saying that we had received comments from MCI Metro.
Yeah, where they wanted to intervene, correct?
Correct. And their comments were favorable to adopting changes, and I think the changes they were commenting on were those from the Arizona and the Washington stipulations.
They were from the revised STIP, as I understand.
The revised STIP.
Laurel.
And we have had no other comments from other parties.
Okay, thank you. If you want to go ahead, if there's no other questions from my fellow commissioners at this point, at the end of the first page, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
All right. The only other thing I wanted to point out was the first two bulleted items are abstract, indicating that we would expect that they would be superseded, and that's because there are further changes in what's being negotiated through the performance management process. And we're anticipating a subsequent filing coming out of that process that will further modify those two items. That having to do with the FCC's determination that DSL is an information, not a telecom service. And there's more information about that in the materials. So if we will continue on, skipping over the docket summary that I already touched on, the next page provides for the changes that are being proposed from a Quest perspective. Some of the changes, as was identified in our comments, are related to changes that have been made in the Colorado PAP as a result of the third year review there, including the creation of a reinstatement removal process whereby specific PIDs are removed from the PAP and based on ongoing aggregate performance either come back in or and subsequently are removed. a one miss allowed in lieu of perfect performance. That has to do with situations where the only way for Quest to meet the defined standard is to be perfect. The removal of...
Does that happen very often?
It happens quite frequently. The removal of products that across the region just don't have volumes to warrant continuing in the PAP. All three of those changes were initiated in Colorado, were worked by the parties, and eventually changes were adopted by the commission there. And in turn, we have proposed the same sorts of changes for the remainder of the region through the PMP. There are also additional changes that are being worked by the PMP, including revising provisions of the minimum payment provision, addressing DSL becoming an information service, making modification to our mean time to restore measure, taking care of some administrative PID changes, including, I believe, one that one of the auditors cited as needing to be clarified, and some additional changes that are still in discussion and aren't quite there yet. Going on, the reinstatement removal process did speak to a specific subset of PIDs based on the historical performance up to that point in time. It included measures about system availability, timely outage resolution with respect to our systems, the LSR reject interval, our FOC measure specifically for LIS trunks, which come in on ASRs, not LSRs. It's our only ASR measure. Billing completion notice timeliness, the jeopardy interval, hot cuts, LNP measures, trunk blocking, and NXX code activation measures, as well as one colocation measure. The measure proposes taking these PIDs out of the PAP. The PID results would continue to be reported, but they would not be subject to PID treatment unless they were reinstated, and reinstatement would be a result of the aggregate CLEC results missing the standard for 3 months consecutively, at which point the PID would be reinstated. Any avoided payments would be made to the individual CLECs with interest, and we would continue to make payments that would be part of the PAP unless the aggregate results met the standard for 3 consecutive months, in which case they would be subsequently removed. Now, that process is done at the lowest level of disaggregation. So, for example, the jeopardy notice interval has 4 product disaggregations. It does not look at all the products. It categorizes them 4 different ways. So we look at the results at that lowest level of disaggregation, and if a product category were to miss 3 months consecutively, then that category would be brought back in, and the other 3 categories would remain out. With respect to the status of this item in the PMP, we have not quite gotten there yet. We proposed the process that was adopted in Colorado. There was quite a bit of discussion. Information was shared. And one of the CLECs came up with a counterproposal, basically taking a couple of the PIDs and having them assessed at a regional rather than a state-specific level. Quest agreed to that proposal, as did most of the other CLECs. There is one CLEC that is still concerned about the proposal
and is evaluating whether or not they're going to agree with the other CLECs or whether they're going to make a counterproposal of their own.
Have you, this is Commissioner Wiefald again. You know, it's good to go over the summary here. Have you submitted to the commission, and if so, when, the complete language of these changes?
We have not submitted the complete language of these changes. These changes have not been filed for your approval yet. They are still in the process of being negotiated with the CLECs in the PMP, and when the remaining straggler items have been concluded, the expectation is that the parties would come together, package the changes into one agreed-upon set, and file yet another stipulation with the commissions for their review and approval.
So what you're going over here with us today are proposed changes that have not yet been agreed by all the parties.
Exactly, and each individual item will identify whether or not we've reached agreement with all the parties or whether we're still in negotiation.
Okay, so for example, on the first page, on this page where it says reinstatement removal process adopted and implemented in Colorado during the three-year review, these is the language you said, are these all set in stone and everyone has agreed on these?
In Colorado. Oh, but for Colorado only. That's the only indication there. Down at the bottom, the last bullet where it says still being discussed in PMP.
Yep.
With respect to North Dakota and the other 12 states, that's where the current status for North Dakota would appear.
One CLEC has not agreed to this counterproposal.
Exactly.
Okay, so.
We're awaiting a response from that CLEC. We have another PMP meeting tomorrow afternoon, and we're anticipating and hoping that we'll work through the straggler issues tomorrow and be done. And then we'll start beginning the process.
How many CLECs are participating in this?
There are six CLECs, if I can add correctly, five or six that participate consistently. There have been others that have, certainly at the beginning, there were quite a few others that were at the first meeting just to get an understanding of what was going on. But I would say five to six is the standard.
After we hold today's informal hearing, then, how long do you anticipate it would be until you would, another month, 2 months, 3 months, until these are finalized by the parties or the parties come to agreement that they either agree or they don't disagree?
Well, and I certainly don't want to, I don't want to upset the negotiation gods, but I being somewhat positive, I would suggest that we should be able to work through the remainder of the issues and begin the process of putting the language of the stipulated agreement together this month. And so it's a matter of how much refinement the lawyers believe that agreement needs. But I would hope that we would be able to make a filing, if not next month, then certainly in March.
And you wouldn't anticipate any action by this commission until we had seen that filing?
With respect to these changes, yes. Now, mm-hmm. we don't believe that the pending revised stipulation needs to wait on the subsequent stipulation. Then, in fact, you could act on the one before you now, but yes, we would not expect any action on these changes until they were put before you.
Why would I want to act on the revised stipulation ones filed 9/22/2005?
Well, because they certainly are not superseded completely by these additional changes. And if you were to act on that filing, we would move forward with implementing the changes that are contained in that stipulation, most of which would not be eliminated by any subsequent revised stipulation being negotiated right now.
This is Bill Benick. Just thinking about this, we have our notice includes what has been filed with the commission. So at this point, it would seem to me that's what we have to deal with. A new stipulation coming in next month is going to have to be dealt with at some other point in time.
This is Laurel Burke. I might just add that the new stipulation, Quest had rather anticipated something coming out of these discussions, and that's why we had asked that the commission kind of take these into consideration before closing the six-month review docket. But we would still want to have the revised stipulation that's pending ruled upon, and then also have a look at the new stipulation when it comes in, but as part of this docket, because there are changes that we had commented on earlier.
So just for my help with our staff here to help me, we have received complete language for everything that's on page one of this handout. The executive summary of pending PAP-related items from revised stipulation failed 9/22/2005. Is that correct? Have we received the long version? We've received...
Maybe Quest could help me out here. I can't remember what was in that filing
back
concerning
in
the revised stipulation.
The long version is in the 9/22 filing, subject to the errata that was filed a couple days later that changed one page. But it included a revised Exhibit K, which has all the detail, specific changes to the PAP itself.
Okay. And there were PIDs revised in that process as well?
Not with the revised filing. There were no PIDs to be revised. It really was just the pending PAP changes at that point.
Okay.
Relating to Bill Benick's question then, so you might as well keep the mic, Bill, are you saying that since that's all we've noticed with this in this proceeding is what was filed with us on 9/22/2005, and did something come in after that as well? Did they say there was one page of revisions or something?
Yes, there was an errata filing.
Oh, okay.
And what date did that come in?
I'm looking.
October 25th, 2005.
Thank you, Laurel.
Okay. So should we perhaps focus on those changes rather than the proposed PAP change overview at this hearing?
We can certainly do that.
And is the
reason we included the additional information was actually based on the notice requesting information about the status from PMP.
Well, this is Pat Fawn again. I guess in the last round of comments, Quest mentioned the continuing process that you were having in Colorado. We heard about it at the Regional Oversight Committee. We had a review of the Colorado process and what the status was there. And so we were wondering if, at this informal hearing, wondering if there were other things that we should consider. So that's where we are right now, and you're giving us a good indication of that now.
Pat, do you think it would be helpful then, given this conversation, for Quest to go through the rest of their slideshow, which talks about everything that's not been filed with the commission? They do go over the executive summary of the ROC 2004 audit findings. Would that be helpful to us?
That would be helpful. I think we could wait until after your Colorado process is finished to review these other items related to that process, and then skip to the 2004 audit of the ROC. If that seems logical to you. Quest, would you agree with that?
We can certainly do that.
Okay.
Okay, so what I heard was that you wanted to hear about the executive finding, the executive summary, if you will, of the ROC audit, and then kind of what we're asking the commission to do?
Yes.
All right. I'm going to let Dean talk about the ROC audit findings.
And this actually takes us to page 10 in the presentation.
They don't have page numbers. So I think
second to the last page.
Yeah. And just to give you 10 seconds worth of historical context, the ROC audit, the very first ROC audit, looked at 2004 performance data and PAP payments for 13 of Quest's 14 states. Colorado at that time had its own CPAP audit. So for the 13 local service region states, the first ROC audit got underway in 2005 and completed at the end of 2005, looking backward a year at 2004 performance and payments. Liberty Consulting, who was the auditor, produced at the end of that process a final report in October 2005. And on page 2 of their report, they had an overall finding that they found that Quest produced accurate payment results and penalty payments, and that of the findings that they did find, there were 26 of those, that most of those were minor. Those that were more important to Liberty, we have addressed in ways that they suggested. So those corrective actions have already been implemented. The completion of those corrective actions will be looked at briefly in the second ROC audit, which will look at 2005 data, which is now just in the planning stages and getting underway, to verify that we have completed those corrective actions. So the vast majority of the report, Liberty and Quest accept the report. There are a few unresolved findings and recommendations that Liberty and Quest did not agree upon, and parallel to getting the 2005 ROC audit started, the ROC Steering Committee is going to invoke a process to address those unresolved issues, because up to current time, the ROC Steering Committee has not formulated its positions. So the few unresolved findings and recommendations that we have with the report is going to be addressed in that ROC process. And probably fairly quickly, Liberty and the ROC Steering Committee, with input from Quest, will finalize the scope of the 2005 audit, looking at actions that need to be verified from the 2004 audit, looking at changes that have taken place to Quest regulatory reporting code in 2005, and those types of things. So in the near future, the 2005 audit, which is the second ROC audit, will be underway. We filed with the commission on August 31st the overview of the ROC audit and our implementation plan for all of the findings, identifying those that we agreed with the findings on, those that we had taken corrective action, those that we continue to have some concerns with. And we asked the commission to accept the report in our implementation plan, acknowledging that the ROC Steering Committee has not yet formulated its position, but will, with participation by the ROC Executive Committee, address the unresolved issues. The commission may wish to get input from that process as well.
We have that report in front of us. We've been looking at it while you've been on the phone with this, so we're familiar with that. Submitted, okay. That report submitted on August 31st of 2006.
October 28, 2005, is that what you said?
Well, actually, On August 31st, 2006, it says Quest filed its comments.
Correct.
And we received a copy of that filing, and it goes through and it has the chart that shows in the different colors, mm-hmm. the 2004 ROC audit report findings.
Correct.
And recommendation summary. Okay. Tony, do you know anything about what ROC is doing on this at the present time?
I think it's at the staff stage right now, and they're going to be taking a recommendation forward to the executive committee, which is made up of one commissioner representative, up to one commissioner representative from each of the states that wishes to participate on that committee.
So my impression is that there have been no changes to the PAP or the PIDs as a result of the ROC audit. Is that a correct impression?
I'm sorry, we're having problems hearing you. You're mm-hmm. cutting in and out. Could you repeat that, please?
Let me ask it, I guess, this way. Have there been any, tell the commission whether there have been any changes to the performance assurance plan or the PIDs as a result of the multi-state ROC audit.
There, the corrective actions that address some of Liberty's findings would have been applied to processes and systems that support North Dakota. Some of the findings that are still being discussed are more interpretive issues with PIDs that would support North Dakota but have not yet been done because the issues are still being discussed.
So okay. Another way of answering that would be there's nothing pending from a change perspective to either the PIDs or the PAP directly from the ROC audit in a filing.
Right. That's what I thought.
Do you want to then now go over the recommended actions, the last page
yes.
of your?
We can do that, yes. So basically what we would recommend is that the commission approve the revised stipulation, which for the most part includes the PAP exhibit itself, the Exhibit K, that was put before it on 9/22. Effective with the first full month following commission's order, that you leave this docket open in anticipation of the subsequent filing that is going to come out of the discussions and negotiations between the CLEX and Quest in the PID management process. That filing be approved once it's had its, you know, its opportunity for comment, and that you accept the 2004 ROC audit with our implementation recommendations. Since this notice addressed both the PAP six-month review changes as well as the multi-state audit.
And that's the one you said we may want to consult with the ROC about before we would make that decision.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly. And then just to address the fact that there was a question in the notice about a hearing, you know, we don't believe a hearing is necessary, particularly from a, you know, a PAP change standpoint, given that all the changes we're talking about come from stipulated agreements. But obviously, to the extent that circumstances change, we would reserve our right to request a hearing.
Commissioners, any further questions at this time? Staff, they're conferring for a minute.
Yeah,
Bill Binnick and I, this is Pat Fano, we were talking about bullet item number 3, which is to timely approve the new stipulation result of the PMP, which is the Colorado process, I believe.
Well, it's not the Colorado process. The PMP is a process that was established by Quest with the CLEX for all 14 states.
Right.
But a lot of the original recommendations that went into the PMP were from the Colorado 3-year review decision.
But we don't have those changes before us, correct?
No, not yet.
Okay.
We were hoping you would, but they're not there yet.
Right. And so I guess, Bill, I think Bill Binnick just wanted you to know that we would have to provide notice of those changes before we could act on them. And so that would take a little bit of time to do that. The fourth bullet item I had a concern about, I think it's, there's nothing for us, for the commission to act on necessarily concerning the 2004 audit related to PID or PAP changes. There's nothing in writing that the commission would approve or otherwise act on. The report itself.
PAP changes.
Go ahead.
But if you wanted to accept the ROC audit and accept how Quest has implemented the results of those, like the results of it, I think that's appropriate. But there are no PID or PAP changes. It's just because the audit is part of the PAP, it just kind of acknowledges that that's been done and that you reviewed the findings.
My first reaction, as far as the commission is concerned, would be if the commission felt that there were things that needed to be done after reviewing the audit, the commission would, in its six-month review, bring up those issues. I don't know that we would give a blanket approval of the audit report. Maybe Bill has some other thoughts on that.
I guess I'm not aware of our ever doing that
with audit reports. I mean, we get them and we look at them. If we have concerns, we raise the concerns.
And we make them available for public review in case some of the other Facilek has a concern.
I guess I have a question. I have.
I would only point out that if the commission didn't say we accept the findings of the audit, then Quest wouldn't have to implement anything as a result of the audit, even though we may have already done it. It wouldn't take the weight of the commission behind it saying, Quest, you have to do this. But yes, you're right. The commission wouldn't have to act. It could just sit there.
Well, how have other states
accepted audits in the past, haven't we? We close them. I mean, we
close them.
We make it available for public review and then and wait on comments. And if we receive no comments, we've closed them. Or if the commission doesn't have a concern, that's another possibility. But
I guess the closest comparison is the annual reports, the way we deal with those. But,
it's probably more applicable to rate of return regulated companies. But, yeah, I mean, MD, the signal to a regulated utility that they don't have to worry about any more follow-up as we just close the audit.
So the first thing would be the only of their recommended actions. The only one that you think that we would be taking perhaps would be the proving the revised stipulation, including revised XK, Exhibit K.
Well, hopefully number two, since you don't have to do anything there.
And leaving the proceeding open?
That would be an option for the commission as well.
Sure.
And then we'd have to hold another informal hearing once we receive the additional information. It would just mean that we would keep this case number.
Yeah.
Right.
And in order for...
Before I move on, let me ask Quest this. Knowing that if we take these up in two separate ways, that we have to... It can be the same docket, but two separate proceedings under that docket. And knowing that we have notice requirements and things like that, would you rather just have us keep this open and then, you know, we just have another informal hearing down the line? Or would you rather...
Jason Topp. I think that would be the preferred way to do it.
Okay.
And the reasoning is because what's coming up next relates to what we're doing in the first in approving the revised stipulation. And it relates to that same audit. Is that correct?
They relate, but it's because part of your notice on the six-month review and the comments and stuff have included all of these items. So it made sense to Quest to leave the docket open.
All right.
Resolve the first thing that can be resolved. And since we anticipate a fairly timely follow-up stipulation, just doing it in the same docket rather than creating a new one, even though there'll still be notice required on the new items,
it still
maintains some consistency. So yeah.
Okay, and you'd rather go ahead and approve that right away as opposed to just waiting and doing it all in one package?
We would.
Okay.
Okay. Are there further questions from staff? Do you have any concerns about anything in the revised stipulation, Pat? Do you have a recommendation from staff about whether those be approved or not, or do you want time to review them, the whole written tariff, and then get back to the commission with a recommendation?
My recommendation would be to approve it. Because we have had supportive comments from industry, and we've noticed it at least once.
Okay. All right, then I would assume that we'll see that on an agenda in the near future. And is there any closing comments that Quest would like to make? Kent?
Just thanks for your time this afternoon.
This is Laurel Burke. I don't have anything else. Thanks.
We'll give you the mic,
Kent. Oh, sorry. Yes. Well, I just wanted to thank the commission and staff for their time this afternoon. This is can get complicated and pretty dry, but hopefully we'll get some resolution at least on part of what we're looking at on the last page. So
this stuff is never dry.
It's fascinating.
And since we know it affects how many interconnection agreements here in North Dakota, we know it is important. So
yes. Just the other day, Bill and Pat were asking if we could open up another 271-type proceeding, and they were hoping to spend more time down at the Denver Tech Center.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We all went down together down at Denver Tech. That was fun.
All right. Then we will close the hearing on PU 06470. Thank you. Oh, no, that's the wrong number. PU 06580.
Thank you.
And we just destroyed all the transcripts from 271.
Okay, I think that's good.
You know what the biggest mistake I made with that, because I ended up going to more of those, was not getting my Hilton Honors card before we went, because I think they would have given us a free hotel with all the points that are built up.